The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. We spent a fair amount of time in programs over the last several months dealing with evolutionary theories. We began by dividing evolutionary theories into two groups. First, those mechanical theories, those theories which purport to show how evolution could have occurred. And on the other hand, theories that relate evolution in the supernatural. And as we observe, there have been three important mechanical theories of evolution, beginning with Lamarck's theory of use and disuse, or the inheritance of acquired characteristics, Darwin's theory of natural selection, and de Vries' theory of mutations. And as we discussed each of those, we found that there really is not any evidence within the theory that is persuasive as far as being able to demonstrate how evolution could have occurred. If you were to study the matter, you would discover that modern evolutionists often will simply pick ideas out of one theory and try and combine them with ideas from another theory, and in that attempting to come up with some kind of model that would be suitable. But the fact is, there is not a single theory of evolution, and there's not any generally agreed on mechanism of evolution, even by the evolutionists themselves. The theories that relate evolution in the supernatural, we looked at five of those. Atheism, deism, theism, pantheism, and agnosticism. And in all the cases, mechanical and the others, we attempted to present at least briefly what the theory taught, to show what are presumed advantages for each of them, and then to show the objections, the difficulties for them. I think it might be profitable at this point if we would simply look at what I have chosen to call some general objections to the theory of evolution. We looked at specific objections for each of the theories, but there are a number of arguments that simply occur as a matter of observation and thoughtfulness. And I thought maybe it would be helpful if we spend some time looking at these. I am assuming that many of the people who listen to these programs do not have much of a background in science. And so I have tried and will continue to try to present information in such a way that it will be helpful whether or not you have a background in science, and help particularly those of you that do not have information, who've not studied in the area of science, to help give you, I'm talking now to believers, to help you have an understanding that there are sensible reasons for people simply to reject the idea of evolution. And hopefully the programs, the time we have together on these programs, will do that. Early in the series of programs, in a different context, the first of these general objections would simply be the idea that there is no evidence to support any kind of an idea of the origin of anything, life or matter or anything else. Doesn't matter at this point whether you're an evolutionist or a creationist. There simply is no evidence that would be a basis of a person entertaining ideas of origins. So we just have, evolution has no satisfactory explanation of origins. It's as simple as that. Now, at the time, we talked about four logical possibilities for the origin of life. One of these was the idea that it is eternal. I really don't think there are any scientists, evolutionists or creationists, who would argue that there was not a time on the earth when there was nothing alive here. All would agree there was a time when it simply was not possible by the very nature of the evolutionary idea. If you follow what is the evolutionist view of the origin of the earth, there had to be a time when the earth was simply nothing but a ball of molten magma, conditions totally unsuitable for life. And then the interminable period of time during which it cooled and so on. But the fact remains, there simply is, I don't believe there was any knowledgeable person who would try and argue that life on earth has been eternal. And whether it has been, it was in existence elsewhere is a totally different question. And it is not my inclination to try and wrestle with that. Fact of the matter is, we simply don't know. Now, the second possibility was the idea that life is imaginary. And we talked at some length about this at the time. There was a time in my lifetime when there really, this idea that everything is imaginary was not of enough consequence to warrant much discussion. But with the advent of Hinduism and Buddhism and New Age teaching and a number of other philosophies that have become more and more popular as the time has gone by, there are increasing numbers of people who adopt some such view. People who accept the idea of physical monism, that everything is everything, often include with that an idea that things are just imaginary. Now, one of the flaws for this, obviously, is that if this is true, then the person doing the imagining is imaginary. And how it is possible to put much confidence in the imaginations of an imaginary entity escapes me. So this also is not a possibility that is worth our spending a lot of time on here. And we talked then about the idea that that leaves us with two of the four logical possibilities. One is simply the possibility of the spontaneous generation of life, that life at some point came into existence from non-living material. This also is an idea that modern biologists really are not excited about particularly, and yet if they're holding to an evolutionary view, it is a necessary part of that view. Part of the disenchantment about trying to defend it is simply that for at least the last 150 years or so, science has demonstrated rather consistently that this simply is not possible. Under the term biogenesis, the idea that life can come only from life, this simply does not leave the door open to the possibility of spontaneous generation. And the fourth possibility, of course, is simply the possibility that things were created, that a omniscient, omnipotent God brought into existence what we see around us today on the earth and in the universe. Now, without arguing the merits of these two, the point I want to make here simply is that a thoughtful person will simply accept one or the other of these two views, and they will do so without any basis of proof. They are simply accepted as a matter of faith. And as I have tried to suggest several times during the course of the programs, the difficulty then comes to be, which of these two faiths, faith that an omniscient, omnipotent God created, or faith that matter and force, energy in motion over interminable periods of time bungled around and somehow managed to bring all of that we see alive today into existence. Which of those two positions is a more reasonable position? And I have consistently defended the idea that creation is a much more reasonable position than evolution is. But we have talked about that at great length before, and I won't pursue that here. So we simply see that a person, I think there are some probably who really don't understand this, who have the delusion somehow that there actually is some kind of scientific basis for the idea of this or that view of origins. And you just have to understand this simply is not true. So you adopt a view of origins based on certain assumptions you make. And it is worth examining the nature of those assumptions. Are they good or bad? Are they compelling? Is there some factual foundation that can be adduced in support of these? These are the kinds of things I think that need to be asked about the choice that the person makes. Now, what I would like to do is to look at statements by evolutionists who admit this. It may come as a surprise to some, I don't know, to realize that there are evolutionists who admit very candidly that there simply is no view of the origin of life, and evolution simply has to begin with some form of life already here. Now, some of these men that we're going to look at are dead, many of them, as a matter of fact. Some of them are modern. I've tried to choose well-known evolutionists, and the well-known, of course, depends on an individual's own background. Let's look, first of all, at a statement by Julian Huxley. At one time, Huxley was probably, if not the leading spokesman for evolution in the world, was certainly one of the world's experts on evolution. I listened to one of Huxley's comments dealing with this idea. Quote, "Looking back through the prodigious vistas of time, I find no record of the beginning of life, and therefore I am devoid of any means of forming a conclusion as to the conditions of its appearance. Belief, in the scientific sense of the word, is a serious matter and requires strong foundations. To say, therefore, in the admitted absence of evidence, that I have any belief as to the mode in which life forms have originated would be using the words in the wrong sense. If the hypothesis of evolution be true, living matter must have originated from non-living matter." Now, let me interrupt the quote here. I emphasize the statement he's making. If a person is an evolutionist, then they are forced into the position of defending the idea of spontaneous generation. Now, back to the interrupted statement by Huxley. If the hypothesis of evolution be true, living matter must have originated from non-living matter, for by that hypothesis, the conditions on the globe were at one time such that living matter could not have existed, life being entirely incompatible with the gaseous state, end quote. So, here you have a well-known, widely accepted evolutionist simply stating the obvious about this. And since he has, then I think it's important for those of us who accept the idea of creation not to feel ourselves particularly embarrassed by the idea that we don't have scientific evolution for creation, as we do not have. Both evolutionist and creationist are put in the position of accepting a view which is chosen on the basis of assumptions that have been made. And as I suggested earlier in this program, the task then needs to be the validity, the soundness of those assumptions.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson@bju.edu. Or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.